Hey, what you doing?
Listening to Hacker Public Radio.
Cool. Which one?
Episode 972, Linux in the Shell. It's on the word count command, WC.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like it when they can take some of the mystery out of the command line. HPR is really great for that.
Oh my gosh, do you know what you just said?
That HPR is great?
No, everybody knows that. You said episode 972. That means episode 1000 is just a few shows away.
Wow, 1000 episodes, that's a pretty big deal. Is HPR doing anything special for it?
Yeah, we're asking everyone to send in a short recording congratulating HPR.
Everyone?
Yes, everyone who listens to HPR, whether or not they've recorded an episode of their own.
But won't that take some time to edit together?
Yep, that's why we need everyone to send in their recording as soon as possible. So if you know anyone who's a fan of HPR, please ask them to send in their recording as soon as they can.
Does it need to be a long recording?
No, shorter is better for this one, so that we can get lots of them into one show.
So something like, "Hey Hacker Public Radio, this is NZ Fangirl, and I want to congratulate you all on your first 1,000 episodes. Keep up the great work."
That's perfect.
Great. How do I send it in?
Oh, that's easy. Just make an MP3, Ogg Vorbis, FLAC, WAVE, or Speaks file out of the recording and email it to ep1k@hackerpublicradio.org.
Oh, neat. Episode 1000 spells epic. ep1k@hackerpublicradio.org.
Hello and welcome to another Hacker Public Radio. This is the monthly review show for April of 2012. I'm Pokey, and we've got a full house in the chat today. We got to say thanks first off to the Linux Basics team for making this Mumble server available, because we got a bunch of people in here. It's a lot of fun. Starting up the top of the list, we got 5150.
Howdy, folks.
And we've got the Paranoid Shell.
Howdy, howdy, everyone.
We've got Borgu listening, but he's muted. And Ken Fallon, of course.
Good evening.
And Kevin Grenade. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so as usual, we're going to start off with our new hosts. We're going to give a thanks to... hey, Ken, can you pronounce this guy's name correctly for me? Because I will butcher it.
It's Klaas-Jan Koopman.
Klaas-Jan Koopman. Okay, that's... That hyphen would have thrown me right off. That was a very cool show that you and he did together. And George, what's that?
Yeah, it's funny because I'm the one who normally butchers the new host's names. So
yeah, but I think having met him face to face, you've got the upper hand here. And Door to Door Geek was our other new host. So thanks a lot to both of you guys for helping us out this month, and to all of our returning hosts as well.
So shall we mosey through the new shows?
Yeah, we probably should. Okay, so looks like 957, Freedom is Not Free, and this was a show on documentation by a hookah who, one way or the other, seemed to have left out his show notes for this one. So that was a little bit of ironic humor that maybe somebody missed and would like to catch up on. That was a good show, though. I'm really enjoying a hookah's series here. That was part three. Show 958 was KDE, Gathering Plasma Active and the Tablet by David Whitman. This was another, why don't I think I missed this one? Did you guys catch this one?
Yeah, I listened to it, and one of the things I found interesting, we've been talking since tablets came out, everybody wants one with native Linux running on it, not Android, not iOS, and one of the things they were talking about is, yes, you could get this tablet and you could technically install LibreOffice on there, but they have an Office package that's a little lighter and optimized for touchscreens, whereas you're just going to be trying to emulate a mouse with most of your off-the-shelf packages. And So, and all the other software they're putting into this. So this is not just throwing KDE and the Linux shell on the tablet hardware. There's a lot more work going into it behind.
That's ringing a bell now. Thank you.
I must say I'm excited about these tablets. I think they've changed the name, haven't they, since this?
Yeah, it's on maybe its third name. There's been a couple for it. Like, what was it at one point? The Spark.
Yeah,
And
that's correct, yeah.
yeah, and I think they have changed the name again, so it's got a new name to it. But yeah, everybody's curious about it. Every podcast I've listened to this week has mentioned it and said that they want to get an interview. So that's maybe we could get in on that action too.
Well, I'm hoping perhaps they can port this to other existing tablets, because one of the things that's been pointed out on the Spark tablet, you're paying $200 for a tablet from the hardware specs would normally be about $100. And I did hear someone mention on a podcast the other day that you could buy the parts to build the tablet yourself for about in the $100 range. So it might be, and you probably don't want to undercut the funding for this project if you want to look at it this way. But if they can make it more portable, I think it could just be adopted all over.
But I think that's the point of building it on a particular tablet, is to get something physical out there. And the price point, of course, is a valid point, but you are getting what you have been asking for all this time. You know, a tablet that runs native Linux on there. So I guess it's put up or shut up time for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's an economy of scale too. As long as these things are in small scale production, they're going to have to cost more until they can pump enough out to bring the price down.
Right, and we really need a way to push cross-platform computing in the tablet market. I just saw a news report this morning, had to be local, but some school here in the state was going to require every student to buy a $600 iPad 3.
That's
I
unbelievable.
don't even have words to describe my it's just appalling. It's that's awful.
Well, the school I do administration for, they're talking, they want to become sort of a technology magnet, but the way I'd understood it, the school was going to provide the hardware. That I don't have too much trouble with, but when you're going to mandate the hardware, and if I had a kid in that school, I would say, no, I don't allow Apple products in my house. Do something else.
Well, what I find quite odd actually is that, you know, they're coming up with you must use this and you must use that, and yet there's no research or anything to prove that having all this technology in class is in any way assisting kids. And in fact, for kids with learning difficulties or difficulties concentrating, ADHD, dyslexia, or whatever, all this technology is actually distracting from the main point of the class. So, you know, it's a bandwagon to have these lovely shiny things in, but at the end of the day, if a good teacher can get his or her message across with a blackboard and a piece of chalk, well then job done, you know.
Well, I can speak to that. I can tell you why they're going to computing in the classroom. And that is because the computer grades the test for them. And it's since they're having trouble with teacher retention at the salaries that they can afford to pay, if what they're trying to do is turn teaching into as much of a 9-to-5 job as they can do. And it's detrimental to the students because every assignment and every test becomes multiple choice.
Can you guys repeat all that? I was distracted by another window.
I'll tell you what, listen to it on the podcast.
Push to chuckle, guys. Push to chuckle. All right. So,
Moving on.
yeah, we can move on from there. What do we get next?
We had the Orca screen reader, the presentation about Orca, and that they're short of people who need help for that project.
Oh, yes, that was the Joan Marie Diggs presentation from Northeast Linux Fest. And I want to thank you, Ken, for bumping the Thursday queue, bumping that one up in the Thursday queue, because they are desperate for developers. And the head of that project is not a developer, and she doesn't really, it doesn't seem like she wants to be the lead developer. She's just the only one left.
Yeah, not a problem. The same rules apply to the Thursday queue as to everything else. So if it's important, it gets bumped. So on the following day, we had DeepGeek with the newscast, and he announced during the week that he's taken sabbatical, just some time off to recharge his batteries, which is, I think, a good thing. A good thing for him, not that we will miss the show, obviously. But
yeah, and also he's doing some tech upgrades too, and he wants to be able to concentrate on that and not have to juggle projects, which I can understand.
Well, he's so prolific. He must take so much time organizing those stories that he deserves a little time off.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, I think he could actually move to a two-weekly, fortnightly schedule with the amount of stuff that he has, actually.
Yeah, it'd make for a long show every other week, too. But that's, you know, whatever he's comfortable with there. I love those shows. I love those Talkie Community News shows. I mean, the news that comes across there is so... It's really good, and it's obscure. I never would have found it on my own. So those are really good, and it's interesting, not just for me, but for my family, and it keeps it clean enough that I can play it in the car with my wife or with my kids, and I really appreciate those shows a lot.
I find it quite depressing, actually, sometimes.
Well, yeah, that too. But look, playing those shows like in the car with my wife and kids and just watching the looks on their faces as some of that news comes across, you know, how shocking it is one of my favorite parts of it too.
Okay, moving on. The following day we had Experiences in the Mental Hospital by Sig Flip.
Yes. Now this is our leader for the month for feedback, because lots of people left some feedback for her, and a lot of people, their thoughts and prayers are going out to her, mine included, though I didn't leave a text feedback. But it was a very interesting show. It was very touching, and I think we're all, I feel I'm okay to say that, you know, we're all very concerned for Sig Fluff, and we hope she pulls through this, and we're pulling for you, Sig Fluff.
Well, she dropped into IRC here, a week and a half ago. Rowan Golfer and I spoke to her a bit, and we both expressed, you know, how fearless putting that out there was, because there, you know, so many of us are hiding behind a handle and not exposing a lot of ourselves beyond the technical details. And just, it's incredible to find somebody who would be that open with what's going on with them personally.
Absolutely. To be honest, the first time I heard it, I was thinking, well, Sig Flip has been known to, do audio drama for a while, but then you realize, God, this is actually real here. And yes, I'm so proud that we have I'm very proud that she put it on the network, because it's definitely of interest to hackers.
Yeah, and I think I get what you're saying there too, being proud of HPR and of the community that she would trust us with it.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
So I think we instead of dwelling all day, we'll just say Sig Flup. We're all pulling for you, and we all hope you come out of this the best. So episode 962 was Dan Washko again with Linux in the Shell. His fourth episode in that series is Paste, and Dan's been quite regular with these, and these have been good for people. A lot of positive feedback. People are loving these.
I've been really enjoying these. In particular, I spend quite a bit of time in the shell myself, but paste is actually a command I had kind of glossed over. And even though I spent a good amount of time working with this stuff, that's one I just hadn't given a second thought. But it's in my toolkit now, so I appreciate it from that angle.
Well, Dan seems to be hitting a lot of tools that I wouldn't have thought of using. The only thing I would maybe ask him, since he does website and server administration, if he could give a real-world example on some of these commands that we might not be familiar with as home users, and say, well, in this situation, this is where this command comes in handy.
Oh, that's a very good idea. I can think of a lot of examples, actually. That's good feedback. You should make sure that Dan gets an email about that. We're actually having a Friday lunch session, because our restaurant's been renovated, so we're having to eat at our desks anyway. And the meeting room is usually open on a Friday, so we all have our lunch in there, and we just go through some Linux commands. And this has been one of the sites that we've been referring to in there, you know, if you want a good rundown, this command, and whatever. And I think Dan is providing the basis for a lot of commands that my networking basics or my bash scripting basic series, which has been put on hold since I became an admin. Actually, it's one of the reasons I emailed the list, because my show was stuck in a queue. But anyway, and this was something that in order to do bash scripting properly, it's just daisy chaining a lot of these commands together, and Dan's gone through them one by one, and it's a great basis for later anybody else wanting to build on this body of work, because these commands are going to be as valid in 20 years' time as they are right now today.
That is way cool that you're bringing this into work.
Yep. Slowly converting them.
Cool. All right. Episode 963 was How I Cut the Cord, Part 3 by Brockton Bob. And this is still a good series. I'm still enjoying that. You know, not being much of a television watcher myself, it's like all of this is kind of foreign to me, but it's good to hear, and it's good info to have in case anybody asks me how to do it. And I have shared several of the things that he was talking about with at least one other guy that I can think of, but maybe two.
Yeah, this is one of those series that I'm going to be referring to in a month or two after moving to be setting all my systems back up and try to do it right with a fresh start.
Okay, the following day we had the Sunday Morning Linux Review, episode 26, and I'd like to thank those guys for allowing us to bump their show down one in order to get the Orca screen reader in one previous week. And following that was Talk to Jimmy Hughes. And then the following Monday, we had The Wisdom of Our Elders by Door to Door Geek, his first episode. But of course, we all know him as being a podcaster on the Podnuts Network.
Yeah, Linux Basics. In fact, whose server we're using. This was a great show. He said a lot of things that you know, I've said for most of my life. It was really good. No arguments from me.
No, absolutely none for me. I've done actually the same thing, recorded a lot of stuff from my father, and because he's the last of his generation in the neighborhood and remembers all the people and why things were done there and why that school was there and not somewhere else and why the well was there and why that wall was there. And this is stuff that, you know, people forget, and you lose the context. I think you lose a lot of history, and it's behooving to us to try our best to save this in the age of, you know, tweets and whatever telling us what you're eating for breakfast. Here we have the ability to record forever the wisdom of and the experiences of people. I think it's something that we should all do as tech people, sit down with a microphone and interview as many people as we can, not publish them necessarily, but just make them available to other people.
Yeah, not a bad idea. There's a website idea for someone out there.
Right, like my family has stacks and stacks of pictures of people that I really need to sit down with my dad and put all those in the computer and label who they are, because I'll have no idea one of these days.
What I did there was got all the photos and wrote a number on the back of them, and just photographed them. And then as I was talking to him about it, like, who's in this photo? Number one, this is, you know, your aunt, blah, 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 and she married to blah, and the whole family history is there. And then, you know, I've just got a digital photo of all the photos that I can use as a reference later on. And then we went for a drive, and I brought my N900 at the time with a GPS, and then wrote the coordinates where those photos were taken.
Wow.
Oh, and I should mention, I'm a little embarrassed. You know, Door at the end, he talked about some of his favorite podcasters, and it would have made more sense if he'd said Pokey and Ken Fallon, but he mentioned me with a bunch of people I probably shouldn't even be in the same podcast with. So, but I sure do appreciate that, Door, that you thought of me that way. But I'll go on the record once again. I do absolutely nothing around here except show up once in a while. It's Ken and Pokey doing everything.
I feel the same as you do, 5150. I don't know how I became involved in this.
Yeah, the community. You guys are the community. Just I intend to replace myself with a script and go back to falling asleep every month. So speaking of which, actually, we're making a little bit of progress there. We have the HPR scheduling system is all over there on Gatorius, and I already have some scripts that you know, I use in the back end. So I was thinking, well, why not put them up so that we can use those as a basis for at least a, you know, a basis for the logic for what we're trying to do, and expand them up. I'm working on the queue manager now, and I'm going to base that in the short term on, you know, reading from individual files. Then I can work on the queue logic so that, you know, that that is all working. And then when it comes to the day where we go to a database for that sort of thing, you know, when people are entering directly via the website, then we can replace those with just references to the tables, but it'll still be populating the same arrays and hashes. So we'll know then that the queuing system is working if it's working.
Well, I, for one, Ken, just want to say thank you for all the work you're doing. I don't think it would get done if you weren't doing it. Thank you.
Well, we just need people sending in shows. And, well, you know, this month I think we have examples of why we need to keep this network running. There are myriad of examples of good, honest to goodness, techie stuff there. And then some really emotional moments as well during the whole thing. So that's what I'm doing. And I think what you guys are doing, we're just facilitating the community. So let's just keep it up.
On that point, before we go on, I've been meaning to talk to you privately, but on the listing on the site that says there's only 17 shows in the queue, and a week ago it was like 60. Was that a glitch somewhere?
No, I did that deliberately, because what we're seeing is a lot of syndicated shows are being put in, and regular shows like Dan's shows, for instance, are coming up in the queue. And yes, they're regular shows, but the point I'm trying to make there is that we have 17 people who have contributed to the show, not counting people like Deep Geek or Dan, who are regular slots, not counting all the slots that we have for Syndicated Thursday. And when you take all those out, we're left with 17 items in the queue, which I think is a fair view of the queue, actually.
So we got 17 actual audio files in the queue.
Yes. And the thing is, I was on IRC the other day, and one of the guys said, I'm thinking of doing this for HPR. And I said, yeah, definitely, we're getting short of shows. And they looked at the queue and said, oh, there's 70 things in the queue. But that's just because we've got the talks from Northeast Linux Fest has extended the Syndicated Thursdays out. So that's added like 5 shows there. And whenever you go into another week, you've got the Syndicated Thursday that comes with it. And then every second week, you get the Linux in the Shell, which comes with it.
Oh, so it's adding entire weeks just because we've added something to the Thursday queue.
Yes. And it also adds the Deep Geeks Friday show. So in actual fact, the number of shows that we received, real shows, didn't go up. The queue will only display the number of the regular shows until the shows that we have run out. And then anything in Syndicated Thursday or the other ones will not be displayed unless you click to see them. And I think that makes a fair change, don't you?
Yeah, that sounds better.
I think that reflects the community contribution.
17 in the queue is a lot less intimidating to, especially a returning contributor who's not going to get bumped to the head of the queue. It's a lot less intimidating than 64 or 70 that aren't actual shows, especially.
It is starting to become a running joke in the IRC, and that, in fact, I think they mentioned it in Dev Null. Or Dev Random, sorry.
They mentioned what?
Oh, that when you contribute a show, it's going to be a month and a half before you hear it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is that's something that concerns me a little bit. I'm glad to get all this content. I'm just thinking that the Linux in the Shell cycle seems to be quite good, because it allows us to put on shows every second week or so. I'm just wondering, do we need to maybe switch Syndicated Thursday to every second week or something like that as well?
Send your comments and feedback on this topic to hpr@hackerpublicradio.org.
Thank you, Pokey.
No problem. Show 967, Raspberry Pi Spec Review. Fantastic show. Loved it.
Thanks.
I concur.
Go ahead.
So I concur, and I'm waiting with bated breath till mine shows up in the mail. I keep checking the mail every day since they say they're being sent, though I think it's only The one's being sent out now, according to a message I got from RS Online the other day, seems to be only the people who ordered them on the first day before the servers crashed.
Yeah, I really wanted to make this episode because, for a start, Clashan is an absolute genius hardware-wise, and you know, you just need to talk to him for a while to see the way his brain works. As far as this, he could be as unconcerned about the graphics processor on that board. Really, he just didn't care, skipped over it. It was everything for him about this board is the connectors. And I had a big discussion on Fab's blog on dehype.org, where he basically came out and said the Raspberry Pi is a big hype, and we had quite an extensive discussion about that. As it happened, he posted that the same day that we did the show about the Raspberry Pi came out. And I think what a lot of people are missing about this Raspberry Pi is that, yes, it has a great graphics adapter. It will make a lovely little server for you. But what it's doing is it's got so many connectors on there that will facilitate hardware hacking. You would not believe it. I mean, if we're probably Linux and software guys, but if you, even today when I was doing my projects, you know, God knows how long ago, the difficulty I had getting my software to talk to a programmable logic controller was just, it was like dragging my hair out. So I had it running, and my project was brought from the second floor over to another floor for the presentation, and some connector got loose and the thing didn't work. So, you know, this just completely eliminates that, because you go into standard interfaces and you'll be able to do the I/O and you'll be able to write some sort of program. And where they're selling this is in the catalogs for these schools, and it really will I believe make hardware hacking just take it, that barrier that was so high and has been so high for so long, it's really just going to lower that barrier down. Because now, if you want to send a 5-volt current to that pin on that and that port and that thing there, you know, that will turn on, that's connected to an LED. All you do is you echo one into this file. I mean, who can't do that? It's just class.
Well, I've talked to my superintendent, told him there was this thing called the Raspberry Pi coming up that was directed towards education, and where he's wanting to get into being a tech magnet and have a programming class. I may be able to slip these in, especially if there is a curriculum all set up and ready by next fall, and if not, maybe the next year. But hopefully he'll be reset. He's kind of a Mac guy, but maybe I can slip Linux in under the door that way.
Well, I was thinking about these ones. I think these guys are aiming them squarely at electronics students who are maybe have a little PCB or soldering some stuff on, right up to the graduate. Some of the connectors are really advanced connectors that are used in mobile phones and for interfacing with mobile phones, and really a specialized kit. So it's cool. But anyway, we should move on. FFmpeg for video conversion 968. Brockton Bob.
This is another good one. Down on the command line, you know, along the lines of Linux in the shell, and some useful conversions there. FFmpeg is a great tool if you need to grab some media from the internet and you don't want it in their format. Maybe it's not readable to you. Maybe it's not presentable, but you want to show it to friends or something. And you can just go ahead and do that conversion that you need. So this was a good show. Thanks a lot, Brockton Bob.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. If you guys remember, my first show was over a year ago, was on FFmpeg, and Brockton Bob covered a lot more concisely than I did. So I salute him on that. And if anybody's interested in FFmpeg, check his show out first and then look at mine, because I still have to go back and read my own notes to understand FFmpeg.
But again, when we get the new site working, this is the sort of thing that I would like, tags on these episodes. So I also would like some people to volunteer to go back and listen to some of the old shows, and while you're doing it, you know, pick out some tags like FFmpeg or WinFF or whatever, so that we can do those cloud tags at the side and that we can improve the searching and put better categories in and that sort of thing. It's something, especially as we're coming up on episode 1000, between 1000 and 1024, I'd like to kind of focus on the past. And also, during the week, I referenced some of the older shows, some of the SSH shows that I'd done back in episode 700, you know, 800, and people haven't been listening that long. So, you know, there is still a wealth of information. And I mean, in when we get to episode 2000, these are the all these examples are still going to be as valid. Here, the FFmpeg ones, the Linux in the shell, for instance, are all still going to be, you know, perfectly workable.
It's hilarious that you're talking about episode 700 being way back in the past, and you're still 700 behind them.
Yeah, and thanks for you put that reference in IRC to your personal website and your notes on that SSH show, because you've seen in the comments I left you, I found that very helpful and has cut down the lag time that I have to wait to connect to my server.
Yeah, thank you. You're very welcome. My own blog is has a intended target audience of one. It's I was running a unix.txt file where I put in all this stuff, and then I decided, well, this is of no use to anybody. I want to put this up somewhere where at least I can reference all this stuff, and then if somebody else finds it useful, good and well. But the target audience of my website is me 6 months from now, which is why a lot of the podcasts are entitled 6 months from now. Sorry, cool. Blogs, not blog, podcasts.
Cool. Ready to move on?
Yes.
Okay. Episode 969, and I should have mentioned this at the beginning. The Krivins Audiocast is a new series for us. Now, was this was a Thursday show though, wasn't it?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, and this was Thistleweb and was it
Kevy?
Okay. Yeah, and Kevy, and thanks guys for sending that show, and it was a lot of fun. It was pretty funny. It was. Most of it this time was about gaming and, you know, gaming on Linux and stuff. And I don't know if they're all going to be like that, but
no, they're not.
No, but it was interesting either way. This was good.
They, I don't, Thistleweb was on our HPR show for the New Year show, which is why you listeners may be familiar with them. And we also have a show in the queue for Syndicated Thursday that Kebby does, TuxGem. Both of these shows bug me no end. Criven's Audiocast and TuxGem. And anyone want to know why?
Because you're an Irishman and you hate Scots.
It's because I have, in my podcasting listening queue, I have the music shows and I've got the podcasts. And the music shows I leave at one speed and the podcasts I leave at... I speed up 3, 4, 5 times. And because they play good music in the middle of the shows, I am I'm stuck deciding whether to speed them up or not. So as a solution, I listen to these ones at home when I'm filling the dishwasher. And then I use FFmpeg has a mode that you can speed it up without turning them into chipmunks. And then I can slow it down again for the music.
I see. Hey, you know what? I listen on a Rockbox enabled player, and that also can compress time without changing pitch, and it can do it on the fly. So those shows that hasn't bothered me.
Yeah, flaky. I found Rockbox on my Sansa clip to be very flaky, so I went back to the built-in OS.
Oh, bummer. That stinks. I like it on mine.
Well, I think Pokey and I both have fuses, and yeah, it's just. I'm glad I finally put Rockbox on it just for that, but it does get annoying when they do include good music. I agree the same way. Of course, the HPR theme is always da 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 da, you know, and sped up. You can imagine what that sounds like.
Yeah, no, I have a Clip Plus actually. It's same one I think that Ken has, and I don't know, it works fine for me.
Okay, the following day was Talk Geek to Me News. And then we had Dev Random episode 00.
Yeah, it's hard to even mention Dev Random without laughing because that was just a hilarious show. And it was full of news too. It wasn't just hilarity. It was good. Very, very good show.
It's a pity we didn't, we could have included that on under a new show. I mean, because especially if you're doing a new show, you don't want to be sitting in the queue for 9 months. So the next time we'll have to put that up on under the rule of... a time critical show.
Yeah, I agree. Or maybe get them in the, because I know they, well, no, because they said that's a randomly recorded. It's not on the schedule. But
yeah, that's fine. We can have a standard rule, add a rule in there saying, you know, we will reserve a slot for that whenever it comes in.
Yeah, it was good. All right. 972 was another Linux in the shell. Number 5 for Dan was WC, word count. That was pretty cool. 973.
I use, by the way, real world examples. I use that every day, every single day. You do a grep for, you're looking to see a before and after event in a file, in a log file, and you count the number of instances of a thing. And then afterwards, if there's the same or less or more, then you know your things are different and you can investigate it further.
I remember hearing maybe a year ago or 2 years ago where somebody had written an article. I can't even remember what the details were, but I remember somebody wrote an article and turned it in to something. I don't know if it was a publication or a company's internal publication, and whoever was in charge of the publication rejected it because it wasn't enough words or had too many words or something was not right with it. And the person who handed it in ran it through WC on the command line and showed them that the word count was correct and was able to settle the argument by using, you know, Unix as a standard as opposed to whatever, you know, probably Microsoft Word or something that they use the word count on that. And they were able to settle a dispute with the WC command. And I wish I could remember the details now.
Classic. I like it. The following day we had freedom is not free with regard to money. And that is very valid. And I think apt as well since we're talking about, you know, the plasma tablet, if you can afford to invest in it, in a tablet of that price and take the hit on the 100, you know, the 100 euros is going to be going for the development costs or whatever, then put your money where your mouth is. And the following day we had, sorry?
Yeah, I was gonna jump in there. I'd like to add a couple things on that. When we're talking about supporting open source, don't forget to support the podcasts and the websites that you make use of. I think you guys were talking before I jumped in about how Door supports so many of these podcasts through the Linux Basics Mumble server that we're on right now. So if you're listening to us, why don't you head on over to Linux Basics and click on the contribute button. Also, one thing has come up is the Flatter. Not every open source project or website or podcast is connected to Flatter, but those that are, because I know it could get awful expensive if you decide, well, I'm going to give $20 to Kubuntu and I'm going to give another $20 to LibreOffice and, you know, $20 to the GIMP project. But with Flatter, maybe if you decided I'm going to set aside $10, $15, $20 a month that I'm going to spread around open source and do these shows that I listen to, that way you can set up your own budget and spread everything around a little bit. Also, a few of these podcasts out there, I know the Techie Geek and Doors podcast, Podnuts at least, have the Amazon contribute button. In other words, it doesn't cost you anything, but if you're going to make a purchase on Amazon, if you go, and I'm bad about forgetting to do this, if you go through those websites and click on that and go from there into Amazon, they get at least a small amount of that purchase back to them. And I really wish somebody who's smart out there would write a plugin for Firefox that would automatically do that for me. Just put a button at the top anytime I'm in on the Amazon website. It says, remember, you know, to click on one of these guys to get a contribution or advertising kickback, however you want to call it.
What was that website? Because I'm going to buy a Terry Pratchett book right now.
Well, if you go to, say, thetechiegeek.com, there's a button on there that's for Amazon contribution. The same thing, I think, for all of the Podnuts websites.
I think he was asking about Flatter. It's what, FLATTR?
No, I know about Flutter. I have an interview with one of the people from Flutter, from OgCamp, still in the queue, still not out.
Oh, awesome. All right, so what you were just asking about the Amazon
Exactly. Wait, actually, it might be something worth our while gathering a list of these, how you can support other podcasts, put them on the website somewhere. Links, buttons, Flutter, whatever.
Yeah, and don't forget, when you're on some of your favorite websites, to go ahead and allow the ads for those websites if you're a real fan of them, because a lot of people have ads, AdBlock Plus or some other ad blocker, and sometimes that's real good because a lot of the internet is completely unreadable with the ads in place. But for some of these people who are your favorite people and your favorite websites, you're directly blocking their revenue with an ad blocker.
Okay, the following day we had the Northeast Linux Fest FreeNAS presentation.
Yeah, that was Drew Levine, if I'm not mistaken. That was pretty cool. I enjoyed that one a lot. I was at the Northeast Linux Fest, but I didn't get to hear any of the talks because I was busy with the table. So I found that one very interesting. I like it a lot.
That's another one of those I think Ken and I were talking about one time before that, oh, it's hard to process and just remember all that information when you get to the end of the podcast, but that puts it into my memory when I do want to implement FreeNAS at some point, I'll know where to go back and re-listen and program that information and take notes.
Well, I have a little bit of an issue with this because I don't know if people are familiar with the story behind FreeNAS, but it was always billed as this small device that would run on anything and turn it into a NAS box. And now with the addition of something like ZFS, with the addition of that, it's turned it into a behemoth. And the guy who was originally hacked FreeNAS together, he left the project, or they took the project, and he wanted to convert it into a Linux solution to do the same thing. And they felt that no, they wanted to maintain it as a NAS project, and it's been basically completely rewritten with all the tools have been rewritten, and it's run in ZFS, but it's still called the FreeNAS project. So I'm a little bit. At what point does it stop being the FreeNAS project that everybody knows about and expects to be the small thing? Is it fair, small thing that's got different licenses? It's cobbled Samba from here, and it's cobbled this from the Linux side.
That's a good point.
To be a completely other thing that's just under the name FreeNAS that now takes, 12 gigabytes to run. I don't think they're the same project at all.
I was going to make exactly that same point. It has obviously progressed into a tool for network administrators for big enterprises, not even a small business, because you're going to have to, you can't just take an old box and run ZFS on it. Now, I believe a while back it was the Sunday Morning Linux Review show that they did talk about, well, you could pick ext4 or something like that, and it would be more, you could still fit it on an older tower and just stick a couple whole drives in there.
Yeah, but you'd be correct. UFS, you could run that, but again, it's still not the same code. It's been a complete rewrite, more or less from scratch, of a code base. So they took over the management of the project and they called it FreeNAS, but they're not using the same code. They've stripped out all the GPL stuff, which is, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying what they're doing is wrong in any way. But I think it's a little bit of a misnomer, because if you Google now version FreeNAS version 2 or whatever the previous version was, it's all referring to something completely different that got a completely different stack of programs within it, completely different UI, and also completely different file system underneath, and to what there is now, which is a completely different thing. So I don't I just think it's confusing and a little bit let me see, what's the word?
Disingenuous.
Yeah, it might be a little bit confusing, let's just say, to call that project FreeNAS when in actual fact it's not what most people think the project FreeNAS was.
I'd be really surprised if we didn't see someone take, say, Debian and throw Samba on there and a really light web server to run the management page, just like free. FreeNAS used to be, so that you could manage the whole thing through a web page and do something like that, and do something to fill the niche that FreeNAS used to fill. One thing you do run into these days, though, if you're just taking an old junk computer that nobody wants, it's awful hard to buy a new IDE drive of any size anymore. You go on Newegg, and if you look for a new IDE, most of them top out at 80 gig, which really isn't adequate for a backup solution. And if you're looking for a SATA drive, then you can buy those, but then you're talking about a newer, probably dual core computer, and you can find those used, but you're still talking about putting some money into your backup solution.
Yeah, and the question is, I'm running two servers down here in the basement, and they're running IDE. They're quite old. One is Dave Yates' mirror server, but it's costing me quite a lot on energy every month. And I'm looking to move to something like a hacked version of the Polga plug, so less expensive on energy, you know, thinking overall more green.
Yeah, I just want to pipe in. She did make reference to a Debian fork of the project. I don't know if I want to, I would consider it a fork, to where someone is trying to run it on Debian. She didn't mention the project's name, and I think it would be great to have that name, because that sounds like it might be the true community version of this.
But I'm not talking about whether it's the same true version or whatever. It's what she was referring to. He was more comfortable using Linux on the base. So you have all this stack with all the software, and you have a GUI tools that met up the FreeNAS project, and underneath you had a FreeBSD stack. Yeah, and that project continued on as another project. And all the tools from the stack up, you know, where essentially it doesn't really matter because it goes down to the hard disk, no one will ever see it. He wanted to replace it with Linux. So that's been forked off as another project. So to me, it would be, that is what, when people think of a FreeNAS device, that's what they're thinking of, and not this new thing where the entire stack from scratch is written from, has been rewritten. So if you think of a stack going from, you know, the various different versions of the Linux kernel right up to the management stuff, Samba and all the rest of it, up on top, if you just replace the kernel, how much of a percentage of the project has been replaced in actual fact?
I would say a good bit of it, because as soon as you take the BSD kernel out and put the Linux kernel in, you're losing everything that has to do with ZFS, and so much of the new project.
Yeah, but ZFS, that was my point. ZFS hasn't been in FreeNAS. The FreeNAS that will run on your toaster, that's been on the websites up until now, you know, that's, if you Google FreeNAS right now, that's, you know, will run on anything. That was the project that people were referring to, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because she made specific reference to the FreeNAS 7 branch being the older one and the FreeNAS 8 branch being the newer one. I'm not as familiar with how the BSD community works, but is that 7 branch going to continue to be maintained with the old tools? Is that community going to jump on that, or is it just being abandoned?
I honestly don't know. And you know, more power to them for continuing on with the FreeNAS project. I'm just, my issue is more on the confusion that would arise, that people would assume that there was a different, that this was the same identical project and would have the same expectations of it, when in fact it should be like something like FreeNAS BSD or something.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, they got taken over by a corporate entity. They're being maintained by a corporate entity, so there's corporate interests involved here. And I in my queue of interviews to edit and post, I did interview Drew Levine, and she made specific reference to that FreeNAS is now a corporate tool and is intended for the corporate environment. It is not intended for the home user, throw it in your basement machine. While it can be used for that, they understand that this is meant to be run on high-end hardware for corporate use.
Yeah, but there was always that element, that company, the name again escapes me, sorry everybody, it's a bit later. Have always been supporting the FreeNAS project. So, that's nothing new really in the FreeNAS development. And I think they should be applauded for that. And you have to remember that the BST philosophy about how corporations work is a lot more corporation friendly than, what a traditional, I suppose, Linux or GNU Linux advocate might consider. Anyway, shall we move on to the next and last show?
Let's do it.
It was episode 975, Why 16 Cores. I really enjoy this show, I must say.
He was upset. That was pretty funny.
But he's right. He's so right.
Well, I can speak to that. I mean, the dual processor motherboards, and they still make them to fit in it the you, traditional ATX form factor, though usually you're going to see something like that in a rack server. And it's my understanding, and Ken probably knows more about than I do, that if you have a server that's running a database and multiple queries in and out and hundreds of users, then you can make use of those 16 cores. Now, he was talking about gaming, and usually the server processors are not at all adaptable to gaming anymore, because usually you can't plug in a high-end GPU video card and make it work with those processors. And even if you're building a gaming system, you have to remember the games, even though they're taking more and more resources, their market mostly is to some kid trying to run the game on his dad's Dell with two cores and a built-in Intel video. And that's sort of been the bane of the industry, that even though we have multiple cores, just only in the last probably year have you seen games actually designed to use more than one processor core. And very, very few games out there will make use of more than two. So when you see in the magazines they talk about your where to spend your money on builds, of course, more and more GPUs, but as far as processors, it's sort of a toss-up. Usually, if you're trying to save your money, if you can go higher clock speed on a dual-core processor, you're better off than buying a slower quad-core or septa-core processor. But common wisdom on that now is going with more than two cores makes you more future-proof, that maybe you'll be faster on the game sold today, but will you be faster on the game sold next year or 2 years down the road?
I don't know. I think if I had 16 cores in my kid's Minecraft server, that game might finally run smooth.
Well, and the other thing is, when you're comparing Intel and AMD, and I'm a big fan of the things AMD are doing, but you usually, if you compare price from one side to the other, you can probably buy a quad core AMD for the same price you can buy a dual core i5 or i3 Intel processor. But everything I've read says your games will probably still at the same price point run faster on the Intel chip.
Yeah, that's absolutely true for right now. I don't think it's going to be too much longer, though, before we're going to have a pretty big flip where I think game engines are going to flip over to ray tracing, and ray tracing is going to run great on multiple cores. And I think eventually the video card's just going to go away.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this episode, DeepGeek was talking about a server processor anyway, wasn't he?
Yes, but he said he did make the point. He said he didn't really game, but who is it? Is it gamers trying to use this many cores? Yeah, if you're sitting there running LibreOffice, I don't think you're going to tax one core.
Yeah, but he wasn't. He's building a desktop machine out of a server processor and a server motherboard, is my point. So I think there are plenty uses for 16 cores on a high load system, but he's building a desktop system. So, and I could be wrong about this, but maybe that's where this isn't matching up.
Well, I think Blender would run really, really fast on 16 cores. I bet if you turn Claude 2 loose on one of these, he'd just be in heaven.
All right, so feel free to leave your feedback on the comment thread for this episode, for episode 975. I'm sure Deep Geek would love to have your feedback. And that wraps up our shows for this month. I just wanted to say, you know, thanks to Deep Geek for that, but also to Brock and Bob. We had you in the schedule as that Friday, but we didn't have a show from you. So if that show got lost somewhere in the ether, somewhere in the cloud, can you re-upload that show? Because we've still got you in the queue, or else we just made a mistake in thinking that you had another show ready for us.
I honestly cannot find that. And I'm so juggling so many things at the minute, I can't have no recollection of having that show anywhere.
Yeah. Maybe.
Go ahead.
No, I just said I couldn't find any reference to it anywhere except for it was listed in our show queue.
Okay, before we go, I wanted to say I have a Project Epic announcement. We've been talking about we are going to test the capabilities of the Mumble server, and Dor and I have come up with a date for that. It is Friday, May 11th, and the lug on, it's the same Mumble server we're talking on right now. If you go to linux6.com, the connection settings are there, and it's Friday. It'll be, the lug starts at 8 p.m. Eastern time, and of course Linux Space starts right after that. So it'll be Friday the 11th, and I'd understood the upgrades he was going to need to make to take even more people than he normally does was something he would just set and it'd be like that forever. But it's something he does on a per incident basis. I guess it only cost him like a buck. But you know, since I gave him the heads up on when we were going to do it, he'll have it set up for that night to allow a whole lot more connections. And what, if you don't remember from previous episodes, we wanted to test to see how many people we could invite into the panel for the history of HPR on episode 1024, which will air, according to the schedule, on the 5th of July. So what we're trying to do is get enough people on there so we can see how many people it takes to break Dor's Mumble server. So if you can hear me, I would very much like you to, if you don't have it installed, install Mumble on your Linux or even on your Windows. You know, that's okay too. And join us on Dor's server. It's mumble.openspeak.cc, port 64747. And all the details are there on the Linux Basics homepage, and that's linuxbasix.com. And come join us, and let's see if we can knock Dor's server offline. That's all the hosts, that's all the listeners, all the people within the range of my voice. Tell your friends.
All right, so a proper load test next Friday, Friday after next, the 11th of May. All right, and that leads us into the rest of our news. We can get to this. We already talked about Deep Geek taking some time off to upgrade some of his technology. He should be back in June or July, depending on how that goes and how antsy he gets to getting back to podcasting. David Whitman, who is running the Linux Fest Northwest table, the HPR table at Linux Fest Northwest, he says that he got the HPR conference kit, such as it is, in time, and he has built quite a display to go behind that table. And
oh man, there will be a picture in the show notes for this. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really incredible. He took made kind of a tree shape, coat rack shape kind of a thing out of PVC pipe to hold the banner up high and to get some color prints up behind. It's really, really incredible. He's gonna draw a lot of crowds with that display. So yeah, check the show notes here for some pictures, and let's hope he updates us with some pictures from that event, which is happening now as we are recording.
He contacted me earlier to say he was going to try and call in, but obviously that didn't work out for him.
Yeah, bandwidth at Linux Fest always seems to be never seems to deliver what's promised. We'll say that. But he's also making good use of your presentation slides too, Ken, because those are on a loop on the computer at the table. So whenever he's not using that computer for recording or whatever else is going on, he's got your slides going on a loop.
I've actually added them to the Git repository because the whole plan of when I was doing each of those slides was, you know, a lot of them are factual, like the number of shows, the number of hours of content and that sort of thing. But that is sort of variables that I want available on the websites as well so that we can keep that maintained every day. Now we have 30 gigs of data. Now we have so many hours of data. Now we're running this long. So that, and ideally, if somebody can tell me a way to automatically put text into a ODP document so that it will automatically be updated, that would be cool. ODP?
ODT?
Yeah.
Open document text.
Yeah, or open document presentation, whatever that one is.
Yep, yeah. Okay, so, and then of course, Ken, you just completed the Barn project interview, and that show is coming up, but was there anything you wanted to say about it now? Because that project is pretty exciting in your area.
It's actually in the UK. It's over beside Blackpool. And I got put onto it because my brother just lives outside of a city zone. It's about the running fiber optic ducting to every home, every single home in a huge area in the UK, on a mountain somewhere. And everybody is going to get 1 gigabit up and down fiber connection. Every farm, every school, every business is getting this.
That's spectacular.
It's an amazing project. What people can do to, you know, when they sit down, and the amount of information that they have on the website available for other people to do exactly the same thing. The show is going to be out during the week. So you'll get a chance to hear it then.
Okay, cool. And as you folks heard at the beginning of this show, we played the promo for the episode 1000 submissions. You can probably tell we're a little desperate for submissions at this time. Last I heard, we had 9, maybe 10 submissions, 5150 for episode 1000. So please get those in as quickly as you can. And we're going to have a link to that promo. So if you know anybody who's got a podcast that we don't know or haven't thought of, please email them and send them that promo. They can play that for us if they'd like. And we should have 2 promos. We'll have that one that we played at the beginning was almost 2 minutes long. And another one that 5150 and I are going to record immediately following this show that we're recording here. And it should be much shorter. So if you could send them both and let the shows decide which fits their format better, that would be fantastic. So, tweet it, dent it, blog it, G+ it, Facebook it, whatever technology you have, please help us to get the word out that we need these submissions quickly for episode 1000 to go off as planned.
Yeah, I think on Tilt's, one of the other podcasts, they said that would be a good use of the dial-in technology, the phone number on the website. Somebody also said something about they're having trouble using the U.S. number. So
yeah, the U.S. number's broken. I've called that a couple of days in a row now, and it is, as of this recording, it is not working.
If you want to send it to email, remind you again, that's EP, the numeral 1K, so it looks like Epic, but there's a 1 in there, at hackerpublicradio.org.
And that's where my show notes run out, Ken. What else did we have on those notes?
I think that pretty much wraps it up on our end. There is some activity going on in the background there for the Gatorius, the development mailing list. So if you're interested in doing some development, you could get in touch with us. We had a kickoff meeting, which is essentially me waffling for an hour and other people listening, but I don't particularly want to turn it into a benevolent dictator project. I think there's enough of those around. However, I did outline kind of what my view on the thing was to make it as portable as possible, basing all the interfaces on the RSS 2.0 standard with some Atom and Apple namespace additions to the standard, that if we're able to carry that in, if we're able to carry all the podcast information that we need in that, which we should be able to do because essentially we're a podcast, then we can use that RSS format as the format which people can upload their shows, even if they're off-site at home. They know that if they fill out all the required fields in that, then we can then submit it via FTP or whatever, or put it as a button on the website that you can download. So that was essentially it. So it was a lot of homework for people to go off and investigate that standard. And there's a few open questions that need to be answered. How we're going to carry tags, for instance. I've seen it done on other websites. It's just would be good if there was a XML or RSS expert out there that could help us a little bit with that. But other than that,
I have one personal request for the audience here. I came across a podcast just recently that I enjoyed a whole lot, and it was very system related. It would be a nice fit for Hacker Public Radio in our syndicated queue. And I left them some feedback, and I was hoping that some folks could head over to their website and plus one my feedback so that they might consider adding their show to our queue, because they don't have any license right now for releasing their show. And I just see a copyright logo at the bottom of the page, and I don't think that's the way they intended to do it, but maybe they haven't given any thought yet. But it's called the Distributed Podcast, and they're at distributedpodcast.com. And if you head over there and click on their feedback, and right now it's on the second page because it's got no votes yet. But if you could plus one that and just let them know that, we're out there also, because I think it would be a good fit for one another, that show. I listened to their episode on, I can't find it. Shoot, what's it called? It's a Java thing, the disruptor. It was way over my head, but what bits and pieces of it I did understand were just fantastic. It was a great interview. But anyway, that was just a personal thing. I thought it was good, and I thought it would be a good fit. So if you wanted to plus one my comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Where is that? Can you send me a link to the show notes,
yep,
please?
I'll send you. Yeah, I sure will.
And it's just distributedpodcast.com, not the distributedpodcast.com.
That's correct. Distributedpodcast.com.
Yeah, but I don't know which post you had commented on.
If you click their link for feedback and then go to the second page, it's the one that says HPR in it.
Okay, will do.
Sorry, I was going to say, it said to release your audio files under a CC license so that they can be syndicated on Hacker Public Radio. That was my comment there.
I'm doing it now.
Cool. Thanks, Ken. And that's it for me.
Okay.
Just got up three votes.
One thing I wanted to bring up, and you've probably heard the promo on the Linux Leak Tech Show, and if you're not listening to Tilt, shame on you, you need to be, but it's the Fiction audio cast, sort of like an old-time radio show, This Thing of Ours. If you go over to decoratedair.com, and the reason I mention it, Lost in Bronx, he's not writing it, but he does one of the voices for these episodes. And it is a audio drama, sort of 1970s mob story. So it's certainly not Eddie Kay, but it might be guys who live in the neighborhood of Eddie Kay and Sal, guys that they would bump into. And there's funny parts, but it's not a comedy. And if you haven't been listening to that, next thing you do after this podcast, run over to decoratedair.com and download the episodes for the first season. And you'll see when you get there that they have a casting call for a couple guys to play FBI agents. So those of us who can't even approach that sort of Eddie Kay type accent could actually try out for this. I intend to record one later today. So if you haven't heard of that, I think there's no way you won't like it. So go right over there. It's probably not, well, it's definitely not safe for work. So check that out.
It's close to being safe for work, but you're right. It's probably an NSF tag is appropriate. I want to thank you for bringing that up, 5150, because I was on an episode of that as well, and I imagine I'll be a returning character on there. I hope to be, but I was a fan of that long before I recorded a part for it. But it is a really, really good audio drama.
I was just going to tell Pokey, I hope he doesn't get bumped off in the next episode.
No, but I wouldn't mind it either. It's not my show, so whatever.
Again, can you send me links for the show notes? Might be no harm to send links for both of those shows over to Dan at thelinuxlink.net. Okay, guys, I'm falling apart here. Can we wrap it up, or at least I'll head off to bed.
I think I'm all set. Did anyone have anything to add? All right, then. On behalf of everyone here tonight, I want to thank everyone for listening. On behalf of everyone listening, I want to thank everyone for showing up and recording, and we'll see you again next month.
Happy Queen's Day, everybody.
Take care, and my news this morning said this was Worldwide Penguin Day, but when I looked on the internet, there seems to be little when we record this, not when you're hearing it, but a little confusion about when that date is, but in any case, happy Worldwide Penguin Day, everyone.
Well, it's the Queen's birthday over here in the Netherlands, so today when it'll be released, so everybody will be dressed in orange and out drinking stuff.
And playing Queen at high volume?
Surprisingly not, no.
Well, tell her I said happy birthday when you see her.
Sure.
Hey, 5150. I just realized we're getting close to 1,000 episodes of HPR. Do you think we should do anything special?
Pokey, I'm glad you asked that. We are planning two special episodes. For episode 1,000, we're asking our listeners, current and former HPR hosts, and fellow podcasters to record their well wishes and recollections of the early days of BinRev Radio, Radio Freak America, Today with a Techie, and Hacker Public Radio, and send them to ep1k@hackerpublicradio.org.
Epic, huh?
No, Pokey. Edward Papa 1 Kilo at hackerpublicradio.org. The fact that it looks like EPIC is purely a coincidence. It stands for Episode 1000.
Good, because I did one EPIC podcast already. So is that all we're doing?
No, for Episode 1024, we will be inviting members of the Infonomicon Computer Club and the hosts of Radio Freak America, BinRev, PodFert, TwaTech, and the early days of HPR to join me on a panel discussion about the legacy of Hacker Public Radio. I'll be contacting the original host by email, or if they think their contact info may be out of date, they can go ahead and mail me at ep1k@hackerpublicradio.org.
That sounds great, just as long as you don't expect me to edit the whole thing.
No worries. Wow, 1,000 episodes. Let's see Tilts go and top that.
Dude, your mic is still on.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.